Hello and welcome to the award-winning Canine Hooper's World podcast. Everyone's invited. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of season 4 of Canine Hooper's World the podcast. Now this episode we have a UK trainer. There's been lots of international trainers this season, but we are back in the UK, and this bloke has been a good training friend for a while. We are not a million miles away from each other, so the accents will match for a change. And I would like to welcome Colin to the podcast. Colin, how are you, my dear?
I'm okay, Carrie, and thanks for inviting me along. Looking forward to our little chat.
So, Colin, for people that don't know you, who are you? What do you do?
Okay, for those of you that don't know me, my name's Colin Spence. I'm a certified dog trainer and a certified behaviourist. We run classes. We also do one-to-ones, but our classes, we do puppy classes, older dog classes. We've just started the famous Hoopers, and we're also, we do scent detection work and we do reactive classes as well. The one-to-ones, we do a bit of, I do a bit of all of those things.
Cool, excellent. So where did your dog training journey start? What made you go, I'm going to train dogs?
Well, you know what? I always knew I was going to work with dogs from a very young age. But what actually brought me into the industry was, it's about 25 years old, got my first German Shepherd puppy, as you do. Knew nothing about dogs back then, but you thought you did.
So you started with Shepherd. So I'm just going to do, like, regular listeners will know this. I do not advise getting a Shepherd as your first
dog. Do you know what? Absolutely. But this was also for another reason. I didn't know anything, and it was a family member that told us that a friend of his had had puppies, German Shepherd female had had pups. And I thought, yeah, I could do this. Yeah. First thing I asked, where? Didn't even ask how much, just asked where. And I rocked up at this bloke's house. And Melvin opens the door, shows me the litter of puppies. I say, and I look like I know what I'm doing, but I didn't. Yeah, I went, I'll have that one. So I ended up taking Bruno home, yeah?
Oh, no, you got a boy one as well.
Yeah. Got a male one as well. But he was gorgeous. He was beautiful. Absolutely loved and adored him. But I soon realised that I knew nothing about dogs, so I needed help. But before I could even reach out to anyone, I started to notice things where he became very attached. Very whiny if you were too far away from him. And that could be literally just feet away, yeah? Just taking him out on small little exercising trips, I noticed that he wouldn't venture anywhere on the lead. He just stuck close to my foot. And if I stopped, he would hide behind my foot, yeah? But I didn't know anything about dogs at that point. I just thought this dog was going to be really good because he stays close, yeah? And then as he got a little bit older, I noticed that something's not right with him. He's growling and lunging. But as you do, you think, yeah, that's what they're supposed to do. It's a German Shepherd, isn't it? So he's going to be protecting me, yeah? Little did I know, it is a lot deeper than that. And he wasn't quite a happy dog. It was a lot of stress, bad genetics, bad breeding, all those types of things. And it was only when I met a trainer, and long may Bev Robinson, you know, rest in peace, because it was her that started to help me, yeah? And then back in those days, the early 80s, there was very little out there for help-wise, and a few dog training schools that were local to us. And back in those days, I lived in Hackney. And she helped me tremendously, yeah? She wasn't a behaviourist. But one thing Bev was, she was quite astute, she was quite clever, she was smart, she understood dogs. And Bruno went from that lunging puppy, growling puppy, I want to eat you puppy, to I don't mind having you in my space puppy now, because you feed me, you do good things to me, it's positive when you're close by. And it wasn't long before we were going into classes, he was doing really, really well, and I was loving it, absolutely loving going to classes. So much so, I used to stop and say to the person beside me, "No, I'll come and show you how to do this." And Bev was seeing me doing this quite regularly. And that's when she said to me one evening, "Do you want to come and join me?" And that's where it took off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Every Tuesday, I would go in and learn a bit more and help her out. And there was very little courses back then. Yeah. But there was a guy called John Hunter. He lived in Halstead in Essex. And what this guy didn't know was no one would know. Yeah. And he was way ahead of his time. But I only know that now, considering all the things he did then. Yeah. And I only know that now that he was force free because of the things he did then. Yeah. And I enjoyed working with him and going up to see him on a Saturday afternoon. And what used to turn out, I'd just rock up for an hour. Turned out I'd rock up for 2 days. Because I got on so well with him and the family, yeah, that I stayed over. And then we carried on doing a bit on the Sunday, and then I came home. So that's the early days of how I decided that at some point in the future, I will go into dog training.
But I think as well, what's interesting with you saying that is, you know, I'm a child of the 80s and dogs wore choke chains, and that's kind of what we did in the world, you know. And I mean, we are kind of TV dog trainer was Barbara Woodhouse. And, you know, that was what we kind of knew. But you've seen it then from like front row of how training has evolved and developed. And it sounds like you actually had a really, really good start, because a lot of trainers that started back in the 80s and even the 90s have come from more of the balance side, more of the side where aversives are going to be used, because that's just how dogs were trained then. So it sounds like you had a really good start of what the power of positivity and what positive reinforcement can be and what it can do, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was a small time where Bev became ill, so the classes had to sort of like die for a little while. And then I met the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
So choke chains and prong collars, well, mainly choke chains, not so much prong collars, choke chains became a thing to use. Yeah?
Yeah, they were.
I thought it was a good idea because, if I'm going to be honest here, it looked good. I knew no better, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it went on for a while. I was using choke chains, and then there would be the jerking of the lead and pushing the dog into the sit. So I went from a slight bit of positive, because mm-hmm. I didn't work with Bev that long, going into more in depth of really bad dog training methods. Mm-hmm. And it was one day I remember, you know, looking at Bruno, and he wouldn't come anywhere near me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I couldn't work it out why. It was only when I picked up the choke chain and put on and he laid it down. Yeah, I remember my partner then saying, "I don't think he likes that." And that's when it sort of clicked in my head. You're right. It's quite obvious he doesn't want to come near the actual choke chain itself. So I placed the choke chain away and back in the kitchen, went back in and called him, and he came to me quite happily. So that confirmed for me. Yeah. But that was a good few months of being, how can I say, a bad person to my dog.
But the thing is, though, is that you did not know better, and you were being told by someone you trusted.
Absolutely.
This was the way. And I think this is the problem with the industry, because, and even now, you know, I mean, God, you go on any of the social media platforms and you see these videos of these dogs doing all sorts of really cool stuff. But then when you find out how it's being trained, it's not okay. And then it's not so cool anymore, because aversives are being used. And we know that these behaviors can be trained without aversives, mm-hmm. yet it's deemed as okay, it's deemed as appropriate. I mean, you know, I can only imagine if I'd gone down the road of pushing Dodge's back end down in a sit as a puppy, how much pain and potential damage I would have been causing him, knowing how rubbish his hips are. But if I'd been told that and I didn't know what I know, mm-hmm. you know, luckily he went to an amazing puppy trainer, and the people that had him before me were really cool, and they found a really good puppy trainer and had all the positive. Mm-hmm. If he'd gone to a trainer that was pushing him down, cranking him up, all the rest of it, mm-hmm. I don't think he'd be on this mortal coil, because he would have nailed someone, because he would have been hurting.
Yeah, and I totally can relate to that, because there were times when I would be very forceful with Bruno, mm-hmm. and I could clearly see him saying to me, you carry on like this and it's only going to end one way, and you're going to feel my teeth on your hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can really, you know, it's after the event when you look back, you can see what the dog was saying. Yeah, yeah. But because I really didn't know, and I'm being honest, I didn't know any better. And someone telling me, who I did trusted him implicitly, because he's been training for a long while. Yeah. And he said, this is the way to do it. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do it. You know, you're the dog trainer. I'm just, you know, come along for the fun and to learn more.
Yeah. But
yeah, I know, well, I mean, years ago that it was totally wrong. Not that, you know, right here and now, I can say I know that. 15, 18, 20 years ago, I knew what I did then was bad.
Yeah.
But there's no going back. I can't turn the clock back on that. But what I have done is not looked back and moved forward in a 4-3 world. Yeah. And I don't see that changing until I leave this earth.
Well, this is the thing though as well, isn't it? Because with us as trainers, you know, we do know better. And we do understand the science behind stuff, but we also understand the ethics behind stuff. Mm-hmm. And now we've got, you know, amazing courses coming through where we're looking more at ethology and all of this stuff. I don't see why these methods are still being promoted to Joe Blogg's public. But I also feel maybe it's a cultural thing. Maybe it's, I know I can say this to you, because you won't be like, oh, right, that's right, pick on the boys. But there are a lot more male trainers online mm-hmm. that are, you know, dressing themselves up to look like either Vikings or Chavs, one of the two. And do you know what I mean? Like, I'm married to a big burly tattooed bloke, so I'm being mindful with the description I'm using. But there is like a trend for mm-hmm. a certain type of person with a certain type of dog to be training a certain way. And I don't think that's changed at all.
It has not changed at all, because the person you're describing is exactly like the person that was training me back then. Yeah. Very macho, very strong guy. But take away the training side, he was a decent guy.
Yeah.
He was a very good family man, very loved his family, loved his kids. But he was only teaching me what he had been taught. Yeah. When you really pick it to pieces, I don't blame him for teaching me what he taught me, because that's all he knew. He didn't have any other way. And he always thought that was the right way. And in the beginning, I thought it was the right way. Mm-hmm. But men are more likely to be aversive in the training world. Yeah. My experience now is everyone or anyone can be aversive in the home.
Yes.
And they don't know any better. So it's changed in the sense that the man is not the only one there looking after the dog. Yeah. Yeah. I tend to find that women look after dogs far more in the home than the male.
Yeah.
So aversives are coming from all angles, from the children, from the adults, the male or the female. But yeah, you're right. The type of person you were describing, that hasn't changed at all. And I personally, there was a time I was thinking it would change, but I don't see that time. I don't see it changing at all for some reason.
I know. And I do feel like there was sort of a few years ago, wasn't there? There was like a kind of big glimmer that things were changing and we were getting a shift. And now it feels like, I think social media is one of the things that has caused the shift back. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that our society wanting everything instantly has also caused this. And also, I feel that there is a disengagement between dogs being sentient living beings mm-hmm. and them being something that you have as a symbol of status, of wealth, being fashionable. Mm-hmm. You know, we see trends in breeds all the time. And it's, I think it's just become, because of social media and everything is so aware, I think we are more aware of what is happening around the entire world rather than just our local area that we would just see normally.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with what you just said. I don't know how we're going to change that or if we're ever going to change that. Yes, you're right. There was a point where it looked like things were getting along, you know, starting to come on the right footing. But as social media has grown, we've got TikTok, we've got Instagram and Twitter and all these different things cropping up. Mm-hmm. It seems to have grown, gone back to how it used to be.
Yeah.
The quick fix. This is where it all lies, really, because I noticed there are more trainers locally to me now that work in a way that I wouldn't want to work myself. Yep. And that becomes easier for them because of the individuals that have got a puppy or have got a dog or a rescue and they want it fixed now. The resource guarding, the lunging, the barking at people, won't let people into the home. So if they can get someone who can come round and sort that out for them so they believe in the interim period, they're going to do that.
Yeah.
There is no law on this planet that says they can't. That's the sad bit.
And it is sad. And the problem is, you know, we're trying to make change and we're trying to create a difference, but there is so much resistance from these people that are using methods that do not align with our ethics, that they're not willing to change, they're not willing to learn. Mm-hmm. They're just going, well, what we do works. Just because it works doesn't mean it's right.
If you bully someone, it's going to work. Yeah. If you're dragging them around, it's going to work. They're going to comply for a while, I would, until I decide enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something's going to have to give. Yeah. But you're not going to pull me around ever again because the next time you go to do that, I'm going to bite.
Yeah.
So quick fixes do work for a very short period, yeah? But then the fallout, when that comes into play, that poor person, that family, those individuals, and they're going to have to find someone else to come in to see if they can fix it the other way, yeah? Yeah. And that becomes even more sad because people are paying out lots and lots of money for dog trainers and behaviorists. Yeah. The other sad part to this story is that no one really knows who's a good behaviorist or who's a good dog trainer, regardless of what side they're using. Yeah. Who really understands dogs here? Yeah. Who really cares about these dogs? Well, the Force 3 side are going to care a hell of a lot more because they don't use draconian methods. Yeah. And there's nothing out there that tells them that this is the way you need to be going. This is what you need to be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find the trainer on their website or wherever it is you come across, then ask for some credentials, physical. You want to see them, yeah?
Yeah.
But we don't have any of that. Whereas the bad trainer rocks up at your house, pulls out the prong collar, gets out the e-collar, yeah? Gets out the, I call it the noose, the slip lead, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Does a few bits and pieces. You're happy because it looks good, yeah? Mm-hmm. So you think it looks good because you believe the behaviours that whatever, the undesirable, whatever it is stopped or ceased, but that's not how we should be training dogs or handling dogs for at all, to be honest.
Yeah. I think as well, we need to make sure we also remember that, you know, for a lot of these people that have these dogs that have glitches, I like calling it glitches rather than issues because I feel like we all have issues at times.
Yeah.
I know I do. And I'm sure my husband will agree with that statement. So I think when there are dogs that have glitches, you know, people don't go out and go, oh, I'm going to buy a dog and it's going to be a pain in the backside.
No.
They don't. They have this lovely Disney idea, mm-hmm. that they're going to go out and they're going to get Fido and Fido's going to be wicked.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the families that go out, get Fido and understand that they need to put some training and work in and they go to some classes and, you know, they're putting a bit of time in. But then there's also the families that just assume Fido's going to come pre-programmed, which, yes, you know. And then this is where I think then people fall into that trap, because you then have people that have not put any effort in or have put minimal effort in, especially when puppy's still cute, and then all of a sudden teenage happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any puppy trainer that's worth their weight will warn their clients that when puppy turns into teenage,
mm-hmm.
it's going to get a little bit rocky and things are going to get a little bit unsettled. And I still think that teenage boys are far worse than teenage girls when it comes to dogs, not in people, because I guarantee that my mum and my brothers would fully disagree that I was much badly behaved than my brothers were. But and to be fair, I probably was. But when it comes to dogs, especially the male boys, it's just a lot. And this is where it's very easy to fall into that trap of, well, you need to be firm with them, and then you need to tell them, and you need to be the boss, because unfortunately it does work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
and it's that but, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, well, this is a hot topic, this bit.
Do
people, people out there that are looking to go get a dog, regardless of it's a puppy, an older dog, or a rescue, I put them into various different categories. You've got those that have got a bit of common sense. You've got those that actually would like to have a family dog and discuss it all, the whole family, and spend time going to visit all different rescue centres, et cetera, et cetera. And those that just rock up at the laptop, click on something, make a phone call, go pick the dog up. Yeah? That's scary.
Mm-hmm.
They have no experience, probably first-time dog owners. You probably get it, I get it, other trainers will get it, you're speaking to them on the phone. Yeah, we're a first-time dog owner, but we've lived with dogs all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Which is completely something different.
you know my response to that one.
So. You've lived with dogs all your life. Well, so have I, but I still know nothing about dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And it's where the pressure then is placed on, we need to do something, we need to find someone. And then they find the wrong trainer.
Mm-hmm.
That person isn't going to help to educate them about dogs. They're just going to go in and do what they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when they leave, it all looks good for the first few weeks, or in some cases for months, until something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, I don't know, it's not going to get any better out there, is it? I mean, since lockdown, it's got worse for me.
But I think that we need to keep explaining to people why we train the way we train,
mm-hmm.
how it works. Why, you know, I will always hold my hands up. It's not a freaking quick fix, and it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be
a quick fix. You know, yeah, there are days where you suddenly have a big step forward, but there might also be days where you need to take a little step back. But we need to look at the dog as a whole sentient being rather than just it's a dog in our house. Mm. We need to understand that our lives have changed massively, you know, from when you and I were younglings to younglings, that life in general is completely different, you know. Yeah. How many times do you see groups of kids unattended with no adult at a park anymore? Yet when we were younglings, that was a thing. You know, everything has changed so much, but also the breeding of dogs has changed, the way people get dogs has changed. Yeah. And I was having a really interesting conversation at the weekend. I was away teaching an instructor course, and we were talking about how the spay and neuter campaign has been good in ways, but the downside of it, and again, this may be controversial, but the downside of it is pet dogs are not being born anymore, because that whole, well, this person had a pet dog and this person had a pet dog and they're putting them together and having a litter, isn't really what happens now. People are having litters to make money,
yeah.
Or they are breeders that care about their breed.
Mm-hmm.
They are breeding for temperament. In the last episode with Michael Shikashio, mm-hmm. he was telling me about a breeding program in America where they take two nice dogs, and it doesn't matter what breed they are, what size they are, what color they are. They just take two really nice dogs and put them together to try and produce some really nice dogs.
Love it.
And I think that is what has changed, because back in the day, if you had a dog that wasn't quite stable or had a few serious glitches, you certainly wouldn't have been breeding from it.
Yeah.
And in fact, it probably wouldn't have been in the house very long, because that was just how it was back then, right?
I'm stuttering here because when I'm looking back at my childhood and look at dogs then roaming in the streets, I've become my way to school. You've had hundreds of dogs you're trying to get right past to get to school. There was no dogs fighting, no dogs lunging at you, no dogs growling.
And this is in the middle of London. I'm just saying, this isn't like some little countryside
This is in North London, Finsbury Park, North London, back in the 70s when I was a kid on the way to school. On the way home, you see the same dogs making their way back to go home. I never once saw dogs arguing, fighting, growling, lunging, or doing anything that I would have been scared of as a young child. Today, I'm scared to go to the corner shop with the guy down the bottom of his two bull mastiffs. So times have changed, and the way dogs are bred now has changed drastically. Yeah. And that sounds a bit crazy when you said what, you know, Michael had said, two nice dogs.
Sounds like they're breeding unicorns. It's like, what do you mean? They just took two nice dogs. What is this nice dog thing you speak of?
But going back in the 70s, they just bred themselves out on the streets. They just bred themselves. And puppies will be found, homed, and I can't guarantee, because I wouldn't have known every single dog that was born, but I never saw a dog or a puppy that was bad.
And this is the thing, isn't it? So let's kind of skip ahead a little bit, and let's go to like the kind of the noughties. Let's go to like the 2000s and stuff, because that would be where I kind of started learning a bit more about training. I was working with horses at the time, but training animals is training animals. And, you know, we had dogs, and I'd heard of this clicker thing, and it all sounded a bit weird and a bit magical, because, you know, you just asked the dog to sit and gave him a little scratch on the head, and then they do it again. And, you know, I was kind of very fortunate that we had collies at home, we had shepherds, we had poodles and all sorts of things. And Dad was a big animal person, so I've always been around animals, into animals. You know, if I had the choice of going to the park as a kid or going to play with ponies, I was playing with ponies all day long. And I think that's kind of, again, the way I remember, like, going around to friends' houses and their dogs were just there. And, like, you'd have, like, your mate's dog and you'd say hello. And then, like, you know, you'd go to the park and you'd just take the dog with you. And it wasn't a big deal. Whereas now, like, I don't think I'd say to a child, oh, yeah, you can go to the park when you're home with the dog.
That wouldn't happen now. I mean, from as long as I can remember as a child, we always had a dog. And that's exactly what would happen on a Sunday, especially in the summer. I would walk, Sally would come with us. She was a little Labrador, yeah? There could be five of us going to Finsbury Park, and Sally would be in tow, yeah? Yeah? And none of them had a problem with her. While we were playing around playing football, she'd be sniffing the grass, doing what she's doing. She'd sit and watch or lay down. She never ventured very far. Well, I didn't train because I was only a kid. Yeah. And that's how it was then. Yeah? The following Sunday, Steve may take his dog to the park. We'd all go and play football and his dog would just sit around and play. Yeah. I don't know. It's, times have changed. We've evolved, whether we've evolved in the right way or wrong.
I feel like we're having like an elder chat.
It's just not working out. I don't know of any dog trainers in the 70s, if I'm being honest. The only one I'm aware of was Barbara Woodhouse. Yeah.
Infamous.
I was fascinated by her.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, this is a tough woman. Yeah. This is a woman that knows what she's doing. But I now know that it wasn't the right way. Which is a shame, really, because we're talking about the bad trainers, and if we're being honest, a lot of them would have been from that time too.
Yeah.
And that's what they would have been taught. And before Barbara Woodhouse even became to get on TV, that's what dog training was all about. Yeah. The way we handle dogs, that was the way dogs were treated. So I don't blame some of these bad trainers because that's all they know. Yeah. But when it's publicized, when it's marketed, when it's on social media, when it's on the TV, that's where I think to myself, where are we going? What's going on out there? Because the poor dog owner who needs a dog trainer doesn't know where to look. Who's the good trainer? Who's the bad trainer? Mm-hmm. They just see that person doing something with the dog. It looks like it's working. They're more likely to phone that person.
Yeah. I think as well, I'm just going to quickly do a big shout out to Victoria Stillwell and the team that are doing the Dog Academy on Channel 4. If you haven't seen it, guys, by the time the pod comes out, the season may have finished. I'm not sure. But on Channel 4, you'll be able to watch it on Catch Up. The Dog Academy, I can fully say it's a really good dog program to watch.
I've got it. I'm recording them. And I will watch them. I think I will watch the first one either today or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard some very good stuff about it. I mean, look,
brilliant.
That's what dog training should be. If Victoria Stillwell's involved with it, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
And Joe Pay and the others that work alongside her. It's about time we had a decent dog program regarding dog training on the TV.
What do you mean? Rather than a person in a cravat talking to a model?
You know, I want to be open and honest here. I sit down and I watch that. I've recorded everything he's done just to remind me what not to do.
Interesting, isn't it?
I do, and that's the truth. Anyone listening to this, I record everything he has done and I do watch him profusely, more than for three trainers,
mm-hmm.
so I can remind myself why I'm doing this
mm-hmm.
and why I don't do what he does. And if that comes across strange,
no, not at all. Because sometimes we can learn mm-hmm. what not to do by watching, as much Absolutely. As we can learn what to do
yes.
by watching. You know, it's and for me personally, my headspace. If I get any trainers that are coming on my social feeds, any accounts that are suggested to me, if they don't train in the same ethics that I train him, I just block them now because I don't need to see it. There's one complete idiot on the TikTokies that shouldn't be allowed near a dog. And there have been various court cases and all sorts against him. But because he's got a big social media following, people trust what he's saying. Now, I'm not being funny. There have been literal body parts of celebrities that have large social media followings because it's just social media and it's just people going, oh, yeah, that's funny. You know, I follow an account about some woman that basically burnt a pie at Thanksgiving and then complained because she'd burnt the pie. And that page has literally hundreds and thousands of followers for some crazy woman that burnt a pie. Am I going to take culinary advice from this woman? Probably not.
I think the world with the technology we have, as social media has grown, I think most of us have gone mad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only on social media to talk about and discuss dogs, nothing else. I'm only on social media to display and show what we as Collins Canine Training Services, what we do, me and the team, how we manage work with dogs and clients.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get that because I see those kind of things on there and I won't use the words that I say when I'm talking.
You know you're allowed to swear on this podcast, so say what you're fucking
because it's been nonsense. Yeah, these people got fucking life. Yeah. However, I'd rather watch that than what someone prancing around with a prong collar on a dog,
mm-hmm.
Causing the dog discomfort and pain.
Yeah.
Smiling, thinking it's the proper way to, you know, dog train. And then there's lots of people liking this. There are lots of people making comments of, oh, you know, how can I hire you and do stuff. I just can't comprehend. I can't understand. Yeah. Now, I'm quite a big guy. And yeah, I can handle a dog. But if you ask my dogs that lived with me, they say he's as soft as shit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hurt them in any shape or form. Mm-hmm. Just before we came on air, when we just come back in, me and Dr. Davey, and she went into the kitchen, and I know what she's looking for, the leaky mat. So, because I'm rushing around, I gave her the look my mum used to give me and carried on walking. So she's come out, if she could have spoken, she would have said, really? And she grabbed the leaky mat off the surface and slung it on the floor, so get on with it.
Excuse me, Carrie can wait 5 more minutes for me to have a damn licky mat. Please tell me she did get her licky mat.
She got it.
Okay, good, because otherwise I was going to feel really, really bad.
No, because she took it off the work surface. She took it off herself, threw it on the floor, gave me that look back that my mum used to give to me, back to me. So I said, okay, all right, Zara, I'll sort you out. Because that's how I am with my dogs. If they're asking for something, they're going to get it. Yeah?
Yeah.
And she knows if she asks once, twice is going to work.
Yeah.
She doesn't get them more than twice. Yeah.
But I think this is where as well. So, because have you always had big dogs? Have you always had like big, without being a bull, have you always had like big proper dogs? And I'm allowed to say that because I own a Chihuahua.
Anyone listening, a proper dog to me is, as a kid, I didn't know anything about proper dogs. I just loved dogs.
Yeah.
But as I got older and I'm looking at proper dogs, my love of the German Shepherd, the Dobie and the Rottie, I can't live without one of those.
Mm-hmm.
The Rottweiler took precedence.
Okay.
And I've been a Rottie fan for 20 years now.
Yeah.
And always had a Rottie.
And I've got to say, a well-bred Rottie is a very cool thing to have in your house. Like,
that's a proper dog.
I know, wicked.
That is a proper dog. But yeah, I've always had big dogs, had large dogs, mainly because I'm lazy. I don't like bending down to give treats.
Oh my God, I love the honesty.
I'm being honest.
Your hamstrings, right?
Oh, God, blimey. In the class, the class comes in, whenever someone first makes contact and we're talking, and I say, what dog you got? And they say, Daxie, and I love Daxies. So anyone listening to this got a Daxie. I do love Daxies. And I think, okay, I'll pass that one to Emma when we come into the class, because I know at some point I'm going to have to come over and help them out. And it's a pain on the back. So what I do more often now is I get right down, but trying to get back up at the age of 60 isn't easy.
I'm all for that. I was doing something the other day with Minx, and like I bent down and then was like, oh, hang on, back up again. Give me a minute.
We ain't getting any younger. So I always think about my next dog. I've always had big dogs, and I think I will go to my grave with big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Rico passed away in September. May he rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
But that leaves Zara, I won't say her name too loud in case she comes in. Mujibol. Yeah. She's a Dobie. And I just like big dogs. But one thing with me, I worked out a long time ago. Why do I like big dogs? It most definitely isn't because it's a status symbol.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the Rottie and I love the Dobie. Yeah? And I will not have any other breed. It's going to be either or either until I pass away.
And I get that, like, totally, because the thing is, as humans, we all have our preferences on the aesthetics of things, mm-hmm. you know, but also we do become loyal to brands, loyal to types. Yes. You know, there are mm-hmm. people that drive cars that will only ever drive French cars or only ever drive Italian cars or only ever have American cars, you know, mm-hmm. whichever your preference is. Also, there are people that, you know, like short-haired black and tan dogs, can I just say though, I could imagine you have like either a Minpin or a Manchester Terrier at some point. Like in your elder days, like just having a really teeny, teeny, tiny Dobie on the internet.
Do you know, you must be psychic, because I love both those breeds.
See, yeah? So you have a type that you like.
Yeah. And I mentioned the Daxie simply for that reason, because
black and
when
tan.
I look at a Daxie, the black and tan Daxie, yeah, I just see Doberman.
If just reach just your legs.
Yeah. If you just took a photo shot of the head of a Daxie just hanging off the back of a chair,
mm-hmm.
you might have to look real hard to notice it's a Daxie. You may not even get there.
Yeah.
So I do have a quite a love for Daxies. When I get older, I most definitely will be going into rescues.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for rescue dogs. I've often said I want to end that way. Yeah. You know, looking, you know, getting a dog a forever home. Yeah. But it would have to be a Rottie or a Dobie. Yeah.
I can see that. I can see that. I mean, I definitely have a preference towards herdy types.
Yeah.
But again, that's what I grew up with. You know, we had the collies, we had the Sheps growing up. So that's where my kind of drift is. And I always joke that Chica was my teacup German Shepherd as much as she was Chihuahua. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Minx looks a bit more like a teeny tiny gun dog than she does a herder. But the sass is still strong. And there are definite traits that cross between Chihuahua and Shepherd. She's gobbiness, I have to say. In fact, I'm going to say Chihuahua's gobbier than the Shepherd is. So we've digressed about, but it's true, we do have a preference. And I think this again is where the training differences can come in, and not always, because there are people that own all breeds that train with different mm-hmm. methods and stuff. But do you find from clients you've taken over from previous training, do they tend to be more your big breeds, your bull breeds, your mastiffs, your molitor types, rather than your oodles and your fluffies?
If we were going back, say, 15 years ago, that would be a definite yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding personally today, it's any breed and any shape, any size. Yeah. Because I think a lot of the bad trainers are not just looking at, you know, training Mally or dogs like that. It's about the money and the quick fix. If they can get that quick fix, they get paid.
Yep.
Yeah. To them, it's about quick fix, paid, quick fix, paid. So I'm finding with all different types of dogs, and mainly for the, this is even more sad, yeah? So I'm going to try and keep it clean. I'm even finding it more with dogs that are socially challenged and fearful, nervous, unsure dogs that are getting their owners are finding these trainers for these types of dogs, when these types of dogs don't need that kind of handling. No. They need more holistic holistic approach.
Yes.
So it's not just for the, let's just say, for want of a better word, the bad dog, the dog that's, you know, doing things that the owner don't like. It's for small dogs, the Chihuahua, the Daxie, all these dogs now are becoming manhandled by bad trainers.
And that's not going to help the dogs either. I can remember, you know, working with a little Westie years ago. I'm sure I've spoken about it on the podcast before. But the way I got free to the fact that the dog had no choice of when it was being handled, and the dog started biting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave the dog a cue for the people to say, I would like attention now, please. And mm-hmm. it was as simple as, if the dog walked up and faced them, nothing happened. Mm-hmm. If the dog came up, faced them, and then turned side on,
mm-hmm.
then they could interact. And the biting stopped.
Right.
The other reason the biting stopped is I remember saying to them, if he was a Rottweiler, would you be picking him up every 5 minutes? Well, no, because you're going to do your back in apart from anything. And that was the big shift change in their mentality as the owners, because they hadn't looked at it like that. Because, you know, Minx still, I ask her if I tell her I need to pick her up. I have a cue for her. I need to pick you up now. And sometimes this isn't a, can I pick you up? Sometimes it's a, I need to pick you up,
mm-hmm.
but she knows what that means, and she knows she's coming up, and she doesn't mind, you know, being picked mm-hmm. up. And actually, if there's other dogs around for her, she'll generally make the good choice to come and be picked up rather than charge them and shout, which always a little bit embarrassing. Her and Dodge combined is probably not the best combination. I'm like, cool, I've ended up with, I mean, the two I've got now are both very emotional. For all of us.
That's nice.
But again, I can see how frustration happens, how it can be easy to lose your shit with them at times, because I'll hold my hands up. There are times I'm like, well, say, will you lot just pack it in?
I get it.
But, you know, if I was to go down, and I wouldn't, but, you know, if I went down the method of giving Dodge a lead correction or yanking on him or whatever, to be honest, he would probably look at me and go, oh, fuck off.
Yeah. And if I did that to Minx,
I could seriously hurt her.
Yeah, I understand.
And this is the other thing, isn't it? When we're talking about using these methods that are using aversives and are especially the ones that are using force, why the fuck are they being used on dogs that weigh less than 15 kilos? I'm not saying dogs over 15 kilos should be treated that way, because they bloody well shouldn't. But I've heard recently of a Maltese coming to a class in a prong collar.
No.
Well, first of all, who the fuck is making prong collars that small? And second of all, you could literally kill that dog if you use that piece of equipment on that dog. But they had been told that's what they need. Because guess what? It stopped it pulling on a lead.
Yeah.
I've picked up bags of flour that probably weighed more than that dog.
Whichever way we look at it, it's extremely sad. And I wish somehow, some way it could be stopped. When you put it into the context of a Maltese with a prong collar around it, and then I bring my thoughts to, say, a Mallee with a prong collar, or an Irish Wolfhound with a prong collar, that really does kick home. Yeah, all those dogs are hurting.
Yes.
One down the bottom's going to die quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad. Look, I said for a long time that I'm going to treat dogs the way we should be treated as humans. So I'm going to treat everybody with the respect they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if someone upsets me, I'm not going to use any kind of behavior that's going to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I'm not going to do with my dogs. Yeah. And hurt them. Yes, I won't say the name, but Zara. she's a very pushy dog. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's a Doberman that she's quite clever. She's quite smart. She works things out very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's the type of dog you can ask her to go to it's the room in the house with all the fooding, and it's got the fridge in that.
Yep.
Yeah, you can ask her to go to that. Yes. Yeah, you can ask her to go to that location, go to a specific cupboard, and it'll pull on it, and she can pull it and go and get her own biscuits.
Oh, love her.
Yeah. And then
I'm just going to say, I could never have taught the chihuahuas that, because just there would not be any biscuits left ever. I used to have to put stuff in secure cupboards up away, because there have been many a times where a certain chihuahua, God rest her, has been found arse up in a bag of dog food. So,
oh, that's a classic. Don't be smarmed by what I just said, because that was when I'm at home. She's as good as gold. When mummy's at home, oh my God. Yeah. Mummy spoils her. Yeah. So she'll be in the cupboard with her ass up in the air doing the same thing. You know, and that's the beauty of having dogs, to see the good sides and to see when they're being funny and when they are being a little bit naughty. Why shouldn't they be allowed to do these things and behave that way? Yeah. If she was whatever perfect is, I don't think I'd enjoy this industry as much.
Yeah.
I don't want a perfect dog. I don't want to see a perfect dog, whatever a perfect dog looks like.
But that's the thing though, isn't it? Because what my perfect dog looks like is going to be very different to what your perfect dog looks like, and what Joe Blogg's perfect dog looks like, and what Jane Doe's perfect dog looks like, because it's what dog fits our lifestyle. What dog, for me, does the job that I want them to do with Dodge? It's sports, it's hoopers. You know, Minx doesn't do hoopers anymore. She does it if the weather's nice in the summer and she's at the field. But this time of year, especially the March we've had being so wet, she's barely even left the house because she doesn't do rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There'll be people that are like, oh, well, you know, oh, isn't she sweet? Isn't she perfect? But there'll be other people, oh, well, you can't do a lot with her, right? She's retired now. She lays on the sofa and looks cute. That's her job in the world. Whereas I got Dodge to do a job with. And I think this is the other thing, isn't it? People are not aware. I'm going to use Kim Brophy's analogy because I love it. People are getting keys and not thinking about what the lock looks like that the key has to fit into.
Yeah, I like that.
It's like the best analogy because there are a lot of locks and keys that are not matching up around the world.
Yeah.
And then you have the choice. Do you want to adapt the lock a bit and adapt the key a bit so that they work together?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you go, actually, this isn't working, which isn't always the worst thing to do. You know, I'm always grateful to Dodge's first people for going, this was a bad life choice. Let's not do this thing. How can we get that message out to people, Colin? What can we do?
Do you know what?
Apart from doing podcasts.
Over the last few months, I'm sure everyone listening to this and yourself would have known all the bad stuff going on social media.
Mm-hmm.
The to and fro and from, well, whatever. And I sat down and thought, and I can't think of how we can do this because it's too vast.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not just me sitting here on the peripheral of London, Essex, thinking about it. Then there is the USA, then there is there. It's all over the world now. Yes. Yeah. The good, the bad, and the indifferent.
Yeah.
And how do we get the message out? Well, while we're trying to get a message out, they're trying to get a message out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what it would need in the long run is a law, especially here in the UK. Yeah, can I talk about the UK? There has to be some kind of law. Is that going to happen? I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
So the only thing I think we can all do to put the message out there is if we are all dedicated, committed, consistent, force-free, humane dog trainers, whatever you want to call yourself, but as long as you're humane, you treat animals in a humane way, then if we carry on doing what we are doing, and now that I've sort of become an Insta person with the team, we're going to be putting videos out soon. We're going to be doing more work. So people are going to see more of me.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? We need to keep putting good content out. If we're not putting good content out, other people will be.
You're absolutely right. And for too long, we're seeing all the bad stuff on Insta and TikTok and Facebook as well.
Yep.
But what I'm now starting to see over the last few months, especially, and more humane dog trainers, putting stuff out there, And I've had a word with our team, and we've all decided we're going to be putting lots and lots of content out. We're starting to do that now on Instagram, And I'm going to be doing some stuff myself, and putting on my personal page on Facebook and on Instagram, and we're just going to grow that way. But everything we do is going to be positive.
Because the thing is as well with, like, you know, if you saying, like, you being on, like, that London-Essex border, there's different ways of doing it, isn't there? Because there's the getting stuff on social media, but also just doing what you're doing, teaching classes, creating those little ripples within a community. Because where I used to teach, lots and lots of kind of old schooly gun doggy type trainers. You know, everyone had a gun dog and everyone had a slip lead, and the dogs were not taught to walk properly before they had a slip lead put on them. They were taught to walk with a slip lead, which not a thing. So I could either sit online and get angry and get in little battles with people, or I could put content out and go, this is a thing. We do this, we do that. You know, I try and make sure with Dodge, I've been as honest as possible with my journey with him, because again, as trainers, we quite often put the sexy stuff out and forget to put the honest stuff out, but also putting some of the fun stuff out. You know, me doing my little start line weight dances on a Monday, the amount of people now that are like, I didn't realize this is actually becoming a highlight of my week, is seeing what ridiculous this you're doing with your dog. When we're recording this episode, we're the start of April. So this week there was a whole garage thing going on, and I went back to being my little garage rude girl, back to the London rave, and had a little rave up in my field with my dog. Like, and that's the other thing, isn't it? That when we train the way we train, us and our dogs are having fun together.
Absolutely.
When you're using these methods where you're telling the dog off and you're telling them no and you're cranking, doing all this, like, that can't make you happy.
Do you know what? The sad thing is, it makes some people happy, because if we can inflict pain, power, control over another, people get a buzz from that. And I could never imagine getting a buzz doing things that way. I get buzzed by helping people, by seeing people succeeding. I don't care if there are 15,000 or a million dog trainers all in the same street as me. Yeah, there's enough dogs out there for all of us. Yeah. And if you're struggling, and if I can help you, just knock on my door. I'm going to help you. Yeah. But to see people smiling because the dog is doing what they want, and they're using humane methods, that's a buzz. Yeah. But it can't be a buzz, and I don't get a buzz out of watching people getting a buzz out of beating dogs up.
No. Like, and that's just weird.
Yeah, I don't get it, don't understand it. But, you know, it comes back to, if we just carry on doing what we're doing, and marketing honestly, so people know what they're going to get when they get it. It says what on the team what we do, yeah, and we deliver exactly what it said on the team what we do, as opposed to marketing in a way that people think it's going to be good, and in at some time down the road, whether it's a week or a month, the fallout happens.
But this is the other thing, isn't it? Because there is, on the other side of it, the trainers that are using aversive methods are dripping information into people's ears that reinforcement doesn't work. Well, of course it does. It's why it's called reinforcement, you idiot. Like, it's kind of in the title, I'm just going to say.
Well, it does work. They're just using the type of reinforcement that gets it quicker fixed.
But I think we've kind of started falling into this trap, haven't we, where there's so much bloody argument over what blooming quadrant we're using, rather than training the dog in front of us, working out what is correct for that team, and saying, is this the most ethical way of doing it? Is this the most appropriate way of doing it? Rather than just going, is this the quickest fucking way of doing it?
I couldn't agree more. When I first started out, the quadrants were important to me. Are they now? Absolutely not. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned the quadrants, because it just makes me think of, I don't know why, Sarah Fisher, Andrew Howell, without those guys, and Kim Brophy as well, Fred Kim Brophy, there's quite a few others out there that have opened my eyes up in the last 10 years. And I'm thinking, do you know what? I'm now going to move and shift in that category, because that's what dog training is about to move. Forget training. That's what we should be doing for our dogs. This is how we should be handling, observing our dogs. So when I'm working with a dog now, I'm not thinking about the task, Andrew Hell. Yeah? I'm thinking about, is it appropriate for this dog to learn this? Is it going to be useful to dog and their owner? So if it is, and the owner wants to train, we will go ahead and do that, because it's going to be beneficial. So instead of just training things for the sake of training, I think more about what we're doing now, if that makes sense. Is it appropriate?
But also, I think we are now more aware of us meeting the dog's needs. And that doesn't just mean them getting a walk and getting fed and having water. You know, this is that's the bare minimum. And the walking thing depends on the dog. I'm just going to put that out there straight away. You know, dogs every day need to eat, they need to sleep, they need to drink. That's what your dog needs to do every day. Yeah. And then we need to go, right, okay, so then what else does my dog need to do? What else do I need to do to help my dog? You know, we've just said with your girl, you know, before you've sat down to have a chit chat with me, you've got a licking mat ready for her to occupy her. Yeah. My guys know that the second, it's hilarious, I plug the microphone in, I come onto Zoom, Dodge jumps up on my map on my lap to say hello to whoever we're interviewing, goes, oh, right, you're talking to someone, okay. Yeah. He's asleep next to me. So talking to them Velcro shepherds, he is
Yeah.
But he's being quiet about it. The only time is if there's an intruder like the postman that comes near our, you know, crosses the moat and is near the castle, that he has to tell the world that they're not meant to be there. But I have to think every day, what are his needs? What do we need to be doing today? And I plan, a lot of the stuff is planned around competition, you know, the exercise he needs, but also the downtime that is needed after, as well as before. You know, generally the day before, if I don't have a private field to go to, or I'm not at, you know, my training venue, whatever, I don't tend to take Dodge for a road walk the day before a competition, because I don't want something I can't control near me. It's very shouty Shih Tzus that have the need to shout him. We're getting better though. They've learned that if they just stay behind a car, it's better. And I've got the owner quite well trained now. I'm like, excuse me, hi, I've got. And actually, now when he sees me, he goes, "Have you got the shepherd?" So we've worked out the shepherd shuffle, and it's cool. But that to me is me covering his needs, setting up the environment as much as I can to help him out. You know, yesterday, did I need him swamping in a puddle and getting absolutely filthy? No, I did not need him to do that. Did he decide that his need to go swamping was great yesterday? Yeah. Every time. And then he had to have a bath when he came home. But I can actually use things like him going and laying in a puddle and being a hippo as reinforcement.
Yeah.
Because he finds that reinforcing. He finds that the best fun in the world. Yeah. And I think this is where the message is getting muddied, is that we're cookie pushers and we're always using food and you have to use food in training. How many clients have you had, honestly, turn around to you and go, do I always have to use food?
Apparently that would be the majority of them.
Why? It's not freaking gold or diamonds.
I understand why they ask it, because if we're not clear in the interim period of how to use food and explaining why we use it, people will ask that because it looks like we're going to be using it forever more. But when we break it down and explain to them, you know, once your behaviour has been strengthened, you can start playing around with it, and as you're building it different behaviours, you don't have to be pushing it. Yeah? But I always do to keep the behaviour alive.
Right. Like the amount of times you hear in the park, oh, they're going to stick with you now because you've got food on you. Why haven't you?
Why don't you build and add some interest into yourself so your dog sticks with you regardless of whether you got food? Yeah. If I leave the house, when Rico was alive, I would take out 10 pieces of whatever, 5 each. And you know what? I'd say 90% of the time we come back and they've not had any of those.
Yes. I was just thinking the same thing with Dodge. There are always cookies in my pocket. Does he actually get the cookies? If he makes a really good choice, yes. But if we don't encounter anything and we're just having a lovely mooch, then we're having a lovely mooch. It's not a training session.
Exactly that. So I'd say the majority of the time I go out, I'll have something in my pocket. But I'd say 90% of the time we come back and it's still there.
Yeah.
It's not about the food. It's not about the treats. It's about the relationship we have built. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's about the value that I have placed on myself and added to myself, that my dog pays interest, is always motivated to want to be near me. Yeah. And if she is off sniffing or going to seek another dog and saying hi, I could be 200 yards away. I do not have to worry, because I know when she checks in and I just do the hand touch signal, she's back like a shot. Yeah. And depending on where the car is, I may put her on a lead or I open up the tailgate, in she goes, tie her all in, strap her in, and we go. So for me, it's not about the giving of the reinforcer if you're using food. It's how you give that reinforcer. It's how you add and build some value to yourself. Yeah. And if you can do that successfully, you do not need those bad dog trainers, regardless of what dog you have.
Exactly that. So, Colin, I'm mindful of your time, and I know that you have a demanding Doberman that needs your full attention.
She's the second wife when the first wife's at work.
I love that. And I love that also you understand your place within the hierarchy of the household.
Carrie, you're not wrong. Because when the second wife comes home later, when the first wife comes home later and the second wife is on the sofa, I will come back in here because this is my place in the office.
Oh my God, I love that we can joke about that and have a laugh about it, and that we're not getting bogged down with the language of all of the stuff that just gets a bit crazy. Because let's face it, we all know that you can put two dog trainers in a room and give them a word and they'll be able to argue over it for hours.
And that's regardless of what side of the fence they're on.
Exactly that as well. They can be on the same side, on opposite sides.
Yeah.
There'll still be a discussion somewhere about something, guaranteed. So, Colin, if people are in that London Essex area and want to do some training, where can they find you?
They will be able to find me at www.collinscaninetrainingservices.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google Colin Spence, it should come up. And
you're on Facebook?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. So most people can find me on Facebook. We're also now on Instagram, Colin's Canine Training Services.
Right. And we give that a follow.
Yeah.
And this is the other thing, just quickly to dive in. Sorry to cut in, Colin, but
okay.
Other trainers. So if you see a trainer that's doing good stuff, like their posts, follow them, share them, because this is how we get other people seeing our stuff. Because if we go, oh, that's quite nice, and then scroll on, it's not going to be seen, because this is how you get a good social presence, is by people seeing your content, sharing your content, commenting, liking, doing all that stuff. So like, share, subscribe, pass the pod, all that good stuff.
I think people must be sick and tired of me. Oh, God, blimey, Mr. Spence again. It's just like to have a new page.
No, I love
I
that.
Like everything.
Let's keep doing it.
Yeah.
Let's keep sharing the positivity, because that's how we get the message across and keep sharing the sparkle and the good stuff. Colin, you have a podcast.
Yay. We started. I wanted to do a podcast for a long while. And you were one of the instigators of this.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so I founded the Dog Speak podcast and asked the lovely Patricia McGrady to come and host with me, because she's just brilliant. So between ourselves, we've been doing it since August. We've done quite a few. So anyone that gets to listen to this, please go along and give me some feedback on Dog Speak by Colin Spence and Patricia McGrady.
Amazing. And they can find that where they are listening to this. So there is another good dog podcast for you guys to listen to, because who doesn't like a good dog podcast? Guys, as always, you can follow me on the socials, on the Insta, the Facebook, the TikTok, at Canine Hoopers World, at Dodge Shepherd on the Insta. And until next time, stay safe. Be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Take care, guys. Bye. guys. I just wanted to ask you a real quick favor. If you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it's going to help other people find me and listen to what I'm doing here at Canine Hoopers World. We're now on all the socials. So we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook, and we are officially on the TikTok at Canine Hoopers World. And remember to check out our website, www.caninehoopersworld.com, where you can find out information on in-person courses, online courses, and if you're doing Hoopers with your dog, you can also join in with our online achievement awards. These are open to any person, any dog, anywhere in the world to come and test your skills and get yourself a cool ribbon.